Testing 1 2 3. We are still early, huh? We wait for another 1 minute before 3 o'clock when we start. Huh? We are at page 261. Huh? Okay, we can start now. Okay, a very good afternoon to all, huh? Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 23rd July 2017. It's our 52nd Dhamma class for 6 Patriya Platform Sutta. Now you can compose your mind, develop your faith, sadha, and your virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the chanting. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dityampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dityampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dityampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajama. Buddhang Pujayami. ดามังพุเจมิสังหังพุเจมิOkay, you all can be seated. Then maintain some form of attention. Then we will start our sixth Patriya Platform Sutta. Before we start, we will turn to the first page. First page on verse for opening a sutta. This is to remind ourselves. On the importance of having the condition to encounter this type of profound sutta. Okay, we will recite verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it.And I vow to phantom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then we turn to page 261, the new chapter. We'll continue from there, chapter 7, opportunities and condition. The master obtained the Dhamma at Huang Mei, means the fifth Patriya, Huang Mei is fifth Patriya, and returned to Sao, how you pronounce this word? Sao Hao village in Sanzhou, where no one knew him.But Liu Qiliao, a scholar, received him with great courtesy. Qiliao's aunt, Bishuni, they pronounce it Bishuni. I think Mahayana, they pronounce it Bishuni. Whereas Theravada, they pronounce as Bikuni. That's why the Mandarin translation is Bichuni. Is it correct? Bichuni. That's why they translate direct translation from the Mandarin. Bichuni. Bichuni. Wu Qingshang constantly recited the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. When the master heard it, he instantly grasped this wonderful principle and explained it to her. The Bichuni then held out a scroll and asked about some characters.The master said, I cannot read. Please ask about the meaning. Then the bhikkhuni replied, If you cannot even read, how can you understand the meaning? See, a lot of people do not have that proper understanding. To them, if you are illiterate, means you cannot understand.It doesn't mean if you are illiterate, you can't understand. Illiterate means not educated. Not educated means they don't recognize the word. But it doesn't mean they don't understand the words or the meaning. The moment it's pronounced, if they have that nature from the past, they will straight away comprehend. They will straight away understand. So,This bhikkhuni thought, if the master can't even read, how can he understand the meaning? Asked the bhikkhuni, the bhishuni. The master replied, the startled meaning of all Buddhas is not based on language. Now you understand. Language is for communication. The word is not the Dhamma.The understanding of that word is the true Dhamma. So this is what the master tried to explain to the Bhishuni. The master replied, the subtle meaning of all Buddhas is not based on language. The bhikkhuni was startled, and she announced to all the elders and virtuous ones in the village, "Here is a gentleman who possesses the way. We should ask him to stay and receive our offering." Cao Shuliang, the great-grandson of the Marquisa. How to pronounce this word? Is it Marquis? Yeah? It's a title, the address, isn't it? In Mandarin, what is the word there? Marquis stands for what? Of the Wei Dynasty. Came rushing to pay homage along with people of the village. You managed to get a meaning? Yeah, Miss Lee? Chapter 7. What is the title? End of the paragraph. No. The sutta. End of the sutta after the bhikkhuni was startled. Then towards the end there. Grandson of 什么武? Fu Ho la. Fu Ho means Wu Ho. Okay. Yeah. No wonder they use the word Marquis. Marquis. Yeah, Marquis is for Kung Fu. He's the grandson of that grandmaster, I think. Came rushing to pay homage along with people of the village. At that time, the pure dwelling of the ancient Baoling Temple, which has been destroyed by war and fire at the end of the Sui Dynasty, were rebuilt on their old foundation. The master was invited to stay, and soon the temple became a revered place. He dwelt there a little over 9 months when he was once again pursued by evil men. The master hid in the mountain in the front of the temple, and when they set fire to the bush and trees, he escaped by crawling into a rock to hide. The rock still bear the imprint of the master's knee and his robe, where he sat in lotus posture. Because of this, it is called the Rock of Refuge. Remembering the fifth patriarch's instruction to stop at Huaya, and hide at Hui, he went to conceal himself in those two cities. So this was the sutta. Then now we look at Xuanhua's commentary. After receiving the mind seal from the fifth patriarch, Hong Ren, the sixth patriarch returned to Cao Chao. He thereupon went to Cao Hao village, the present day Cao Quan, in Zhujiang district. What is it? Oh, we are going there. Oh, okay. Good. Our spiritual trip will include this Cao Quan. In the Zhujiang district. When he arrived in the vicinity of Nanhua Temple, this is the temple he finally settled down and I think delivered a lot of teaching. Nanhua Temple, which before had been Baoling Temple. No one knew that he was the one who held the rope and the bow. Then this Liu Qiliao was a wealthy retired official who enjoyed studying the Buddha Dharma. He welcomed the master reverently and made offerings to him. Qiliao and his aunt, Bishuni, Wu Jingshan, limitless treasury. Oh, the meaning is very good. Where the six patriarchs, great Dhamma, were the six patriarchs' great Dhamma protector. Wu Jingshan liked to recite the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. This sutta in 10 volumes was spoken by the Buddha just before he went into Parinibbana. Here, Shenhua translates, he went to Nirvana. Nirvana is not a place. He realized Parinibbana. All these enlightened beings, they don't die. They will cease into the realization of Nirvana. Therefore, my mind will cease. There is no more rebirth consciousness. So it's just cessation. And they call this Parinibbana. Means the form and mind disperse. Hearing the recitation, the six patriarchs understood the subtle principle and explained it to Bishuni, to the Bishuni. Probably she couldn't read very well because she asked the master, "What is this word?" "Do you mean you can't read?" said the master. "No, I can't," she said. "Well, I can't either," said the master. "But if you ask about the meaning, I can explain it to you. You can't even read it. How can you know what it means?" the Bhikshuni asked. The master said, "The Buddha's heart, the mind Dhamma, the wonderful principle of sudden enlightenment has nothing to do with words. Instead, it points directly to the mind, so that we can see our own nature and become Buddhas. Since it is not based on language, it doesn't matter whether you can read or you can't." Then Bishuni Wu Jingshan thought that was very strange indeed. She told everyone in the village, "Here is a gentleman who has the way. He is a virtuous Dhamma master. He may not be able to read, but he is enlightened. So we should make offerings to him." Although she didn't know a lot of character, Wu Jingshan was nevertheless an incredible Bhikshuni. She ate one meal a day and never lay down to sleep, because she knew that the fourth patriarch recommended this practice. Although her family was wealthy, she kept the precept of never holding money. She studied and recited sutta industriously. And when the time came, she died sitting up in meditation. Many days, many years has passed, and her body still had not decayed, because she was vigorous and worked hard at cultivation, and had no sexual desire. Her flesh transformed into indestructible Vajra. I saw the body in the temple of Zhujiang. It is truly awesome. Among the villagers who paid respect to the Grand Master was the great-grandson of Marquis Wu. Marquis Wu was very intelligent. He was in fact as clever as a fox. He was a genius, but he had a tendency to be jealous. Bhikkhuni Wu Jingshan promoted the six patriarch. "Do you know who he is?" She would say, "He is the rightful successor to the fifth patriarch. He holds the rope and the bow, or the bat. One flower may be beautiful, but it looks much better surrounded by greeneries. If no one had protected him, the sixth patriarch would surely have been murdered by Sun Xiu's gang or those of other religion. His Dharma assembly flourished because his disciple and lay people such as Bhikkhuni Wu Qingshao and her nephew Liu Qiliao, the scholar, guarded and protected him. Vinaya master Tong Ying also brought several hundred of students to study with the master, and each student told his friend to come. So every day for lunch, there were between 1,500 to 2,000 people, 700 or 800 of whom were members of the Sangha. Everyone made heartfelt offering to help rebuild Nanhua Temple. Some gave 10,000 ounces of silver, some gave 1,000,000. They asked the master to live there. And before long, it was a great Bohi Mandala, big enough for several thousand people. A little over 9 months later, several hundreds of sensuous men left Huangmei, passing through the Tayu Temple range on their way to Nanhua Temple. They traveled for over 2 months. If they haven't been intent on killing the master and stealing the rope and the bat, they would have given up after a couple of days. Think it over. 16 or 17 years have passed since the transmission, and the master had only been staying at Nanhua for 9 months when the evil people returned. It's not easy to be a patriot unless you are a phony. Real patriot lives in danger, in great danger. The sixth patriot has spiritual powers, and he knew that not just one or two, but several hundred were after him. He hid in the rock a refuge, which is just big enough to hold one person sitting in meditation. The evil man mingled in with the large crowd and stealthily set fire to the mountain. They burned off the entire area but never found the master. While hiding, the master probably meditated with great intensity because the texture of his robe and the mark of his knee can still be seen imprint in the rock. When I was at Nanhua Temple, I sat in the rock for a while. But I wasn't seeking refuge. I was just trying it out. When you sit inside it, no one can see you. So this is based on what Xuanhua's commentary, which means Xuanhua went to that rock and he went in and sat there. And according to Xuanhua, really, you can be inside there meditating. Nobody can see you. So this chapter is quite straightforward. Okay, turn to the next page. This chapter onward will be very interesting. It's regarding the Bhikkhu Fa Hai. When Bhikkhu Fa Hai of Chujiang City in Sao Chou, first called on the patriarch, he asked, "Will you please instruct me on the sentence, Buddha is mine?" The master said, "When one's preceding thought are not conceived," here they use the word perceive, it should be conceive, "this is mine. And when one's subsequent thought are not extinguished, this is Buddha." The setting up of mark is mine, and separation from them is Buddha. Were I to explain it fully, I would not finish before the end of the present age. Then he told this Fahai, he said, "Listen to my verse. When the mind is called wisdom, then the Buddha is called Samadhi. When Samadhi and wisdom are equal, the consciousness is pure. So here they use different English word, which is not so appropriate. Samadhi is not concentration. Samadhi is the collectedness of mind, unwavering mind, but it's a free mind. Then the intellect is just the intellect, which is not this case. But he used the word the intellect. It should be the consciousness is pure. Understanding this Dhamma teaching by practicing within your own nature, the function is basically unproduced. It is right to cultivate both. At this word, Fahai was greatly enlightened and spoke a verse in praise. This mind is basically Buddha. By not understanding, I disgrace myself. I know the cause of samadhi and wisdom. I know the cause of samadhi and wisdom is to cultivate both and separate myself from all things. It's not separate, it's detached. Detached. Means not to cling, not to grasp. So this is the sutta part. Then we go on to the commentary. Bhikkhu Fahai, also called Wen Yuan, compiled and edited the Platform Sutta from the Six Patriarchs lecture. Although I dare not say that he liked to be first, when he wrote this chapter, he certainly thought, I'm the master's number one great disciple, and consequently wrote about himself first. Great master, said Fahai, I don't understand the sentence. This mind is Buddha. Please explain. Then the Six Patriarchs explained, do not conceive. Here they use the word produce. Do not conceive the former thought, said the Buddha. Said the master. And just that is mine. Do not extinguish the later thought. And just that is Buddha. Do not extinguish the later thought. That one we have gone through. And just that is Buddha. With neither production nor extinction, the mind itself is Buddha. All appearances are set up by the mind, and you can set up all appearances and be, this word they use, separate is not correct, detached from them. That is Buddha. The mind is called wisdom, and Buddha is called samadhi. When samadhi and wisdom are equal, the mind is Buddha. And Buddha is mind. They are just one substance. When thought is pure, then wisdom and samadhi, mind and Buddha, are equal. If you understand the sudden teaching, you know that the Buddha is not separate from the mind, and the mind is not separate from the Buddha. Samadhi is not separate from wisdom, and wisdom is not separate from samadhi. You don't understand because you have accumulated bad habits for many ages. The wonderful function of the self nature is basically unproduced and undestroyed. So when you cultivate the mind, you cultivate the Buddha. When you cultivate the Buddha, you cultivate the mind. The same apply to samadhi and wisdom. You should cultivate them equally. When you don't understand, there are two, mind and Buddha. When you understand, they know that they are originally one. So in cultivating samadhi and wisdom, you should separate yourself from all mark. So this is the profound teaching. So Fahai, the bhikkhu, he was asking the Six Patriarchs, what do you mean by mind is Buddha? So So this is a very, very profound question. Because you used to hear this word, isn't it? 心就是佛, 佛就是心. Shenhua used to recite this. 你无慧佛就无慧心. So the meaning is very profound. This mind and the Buddha, they are just words. Mind is the Buddha. You can see these two or not? Then the six patriarchs say, when the mind is called wisdom, this one is called samadhi. These two, they are together. They are actually one. Where this one is the true mind. Without the true mind, you cannot awaken and develop wisdom. You cannot awaken and develop wisdom. Then when you talk about Buddha, this one is the word Buddha. And like what I explained to you, yeah? You remember the form and mind? Five aggregate? This one is the consciousness. Consciousness of the mundane mind. Then this one is the physical form. Physical form. So these two together is called the five aggregate of form and mind. Form and mind. So this one is karmically conditioned out. So this one we may call it the functional body. Functional body. Yeah? Of that segmented life. Segmented life. So this functional body of the segmented life, we call it the Nimanakaya. So for the Buddha, you can say, this is the Buddha. That is perform the function of the Buddha. So when you talk about the Buddha, you are referring to this one. But the Buddha can only, the form and mind, the functional body, can only become the Buddha when its full understanding arises. So there is this Sambhogayakaya, means spiritual body. Sambhogayakaya. Sambo, Gaya, Kaya. So this one is the spiritual body. This one is the wisdom part. Because this is connected to this. That's why this form of mind becomes the Buddha. So this Nimanakaya performs the function of a Buddha. performs the function of a Buddha. Can follow? Yeah? So this one you call the Buddha. This whole thing you call the Buddha. Because it performs the function of the Buddha. So mind here means the true mind that can develop the direct seeing to awaken, that is the true mind. So mind will give rise to wisdom. Then this mind, when it has the wisdom connected, this consciousness or this mind becomes Buddha. Because this is the consciousness that has no more delusion, that has the perfection of the spiritual body. You understand? That's why they say this is Buddha. So the Buddha's mind is always in samadhi. It is in samadhi because wisdom is connected to it. Because wisdom is connected. Do it. Means this wisdom from the spiritual nature is connected to it. You can follow. Eh? Okay? So this mind, which is the true mind, after it has developed the direct seeing, it awakens. When it awakens, it has wisdom. Yeah. That's how the spiritual body comes about. So this one becomes the spiritual body, connected to the five aggregate of form and mind, connected to this consciousness inside them. And because of this wisdom, this consciousness is in, they call samadhi. But this is born of wisdom. So this samadhi has upekkha, enlightenment factor. That's why mind is Buddha. Then Buddha is mind. The two are the same. And this mind, when it has the wisdom, is always in samadhi. And because of the wisdom, it is in the state of equanimity. That's why it don't suffer anymore. It don't have problem anymore. There is equanimity at every moment of consciousness. The mind of the Buddha is in samadhi, unwavering, because of the wisdom. So with this understanding, come back to the sutta, you will understand. That's why the sixth Paitriya said, when one preceding thought are not conceived, this is mind. Because you don't perceive it. You remember the Surangama Sutta say? Perception of form is what? Eh? When you perceive something, the external form, what is that? Ah, it's consciousness. That's why the Zen master points towards the table. Because that student say he is enlightened. Then he points towards the table. He said, what is that? He said, table. The master whack him. You enlightened, still got table. because you still perceive form. Yeah. So here is very clear. When one preceding thought are not conceived, means you don't arise any perception. That itself is mind, which is wisdom. And once subsequent thought, the following thought, are not extinguished. This is Buddha. Not extinguished means this consciousness or this true mind, which has the wisdom connected in samadhi and upekha, this one will not do anything. It will not go and extinguish or suppress it or control that subsequent thought from arising. It just flow with it. Accept things as they are, see things as they are. That's why that is Buddha. If he still got to suppress the thought, control the thought, then only he cannot get angry. He is not the Buddha. Understand? That's why subsequent thought, he will not extinguish it. He will not try to make it stop. He will not do anything. So here, Bhikkhu Fahai, immediately after he heard this, especially after the whole poem or stanza was recited to him, he straight away came to great awakening. Then he expressed it out in his own way. So he said he now understood. Basically, this mind is basically Buddha. By not understanding, I disgrace myself. I know the cause of samadhi and wisdom is to cultivate both and separate the nature from all things. Means you cannot say, I want to cultivate wisdom or I want to develop samadhi. Then only I can have the wisdom. There is no such thing, because these two are connected. You remember on the chapter, samadhi and wisdom, in the earlier chapter, it's the same. It's like, I give you the analogy like a stick in there. Achan Cha also gives the same analogy. A stick got two ends in there. Yeah? First
and second.
The moment you leave up this stick, you cannot say, I just want to leave up this end. I don't want this end. Cannot. Because that stick has two. The moment you move it, both will arise. What happened? Is it recording? Okay, start up. So samadhi and wisdom, they go hand in hand together. So do not be deluded by people who tell you you have to develop samadhi first. Then only wisdom can arise. I explained to you all before, well, these two are connected. Without samadhi, there is no wisdom. That one you can understand, isn't it? Well, without samadhi, your mind is not collected and unwavering. The moment you have samadhi, the mind becomes unwavering, collected. Then you can see things as they are, and you can awaken. You can realize the truth. But the moment you realize the truth, this wisdom is the one that makes this samadhi become the real samadhi. Means upekha. Means samadhi with wisdom connected, it becomes equanimity. That's why the real samadhi is with wisdom, which is equanimity of mind. So samadhi can never become true samadhi without wisdom. Wisdom cannot arise before samadhi of mind arise. You can follow. So samadhi of mind, initially, like I said, before you have the wisdom, you need samadhi. Otherwise, your mind is not stable enough. It is not collected and unwavering. That's why the sixth enlightenment factor is samadhi. Then the seventh enlightenment factor only, upekkha. Yeah. So the sixth one is to enable you to have the direct seeing, to see things as they are, so that the mind can awaken and develop the wisdom. But after the wisdom arises, this samadhi, technically, you don't need to be in that state. Even when your body is very weak, you're about to die, you don't need to go into this samadhi state. Because this one has developed wisdom. And wisdom, which is in equanimity, this form and mind will not be deceived or deluded anymore. Where that mind is a free mind, it's not a conditioned mind. So the enlightenment factor goes that way. Because without the initial samadhi, yeah, collected and unwavering, during your daily mindfulness, you cannot see things as they are. You cannot have the direct seeing to awaken. It's not stable enough. Every moment of sense or consciousness, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile feel or think, what happened to your mind? If it's without samadhi, this mind will stir, react, waver. Because without samadhi, it's not collected. It's not unwavering. That's why it will stir, react. And because of that, your mind become deceived. Your views and opinion take over. That's why the mind stir and react. But once samadhi is established, this mind does not move. That's why it will not act according to memory anymore. It's just silent away. That's why meditation don't do anything. Just silent away. And through that silent awareness, under the four foundations of mindfulness, you will come to understand everything. You will awaken and develop the wisdom. Then this wisdom that frees the mind bring about the last factor of enlightenment, which is upekkha. So now you can understand. Yeah? That's why the preceding thought, yeah? Because of the wisdom, the mind is not affected at all. So here, Hui Ning, he explained to this Fahai, he said, when one's preceding thought are not conceived, this is mind with wisdom. That's why you don't go and perceive it, understand? You're just aware. And after that, when one subsequent thought are not extinguished, this is Buddha. So the setting up of mark is by the mind. Now you understand? Yeah? What is a mark? Mark of what? Self, mark of others, mark of the phenomenal world. Everything that you come to know is a mark. Because you perceive it. So this mind, yeah, when you perceive something, you are setting up mark. So the setting up of mark is the mundane mind. You understand? Not the true mind, not wisdom. So this is the one that deceives you. And separation from them is Buddha. Means separate. Or we use another word, we should be detached. Means you don't have any attachment. The moment the wisdom is there, then it will not cling, it will not hold. So it is not to say separation from there, you try to separate from them. No. You know they exist only in the conditioned world, but you will not attach. That's why you don't go and run away, understand? No? You still see, you still hear, you still smell, taste, tactile, feel and think. You still eat. But you are not deluded by it. You are not deceived by it. That's why there is complete understanding. And the mind can just detach. So this part is very important. The setting up of the mark is by the mind, which is the mundane mind. When that Monday Meister. And the separation, or the detachment from all mark is Buddha. Whereas the Buddha can see things as they are, echo and flow, and he will not be deluded by the phenomenal. He will not attach, he will not cling. Then Huineng say, were I to explain it fully, I would not finish before the end of the present age. Because regarding the mark and all those things, there is a lot to talk about. Because there is delusion, ignorance, and all the essential Dhamma all come out. Then he say, instead of trying to understand, he said, you listen to my verse. This one we go through. It will help you. When the mind is called wisdom, then the Buddha is called samadhi. So, just now I explained. Mind is Buddha. Mind here refer to true mind. Buddha refer to the five aggregate of form and mind with the wisdom connected. This pure mind with samadhi and upeka with the wisdom connected, and that one lives the life of a Buddha, the functional body of the living being, or the nimanakaya, the functional body of the Buddha. Then he said, the Buddha is called samadhi. When samadhi and wisdom are equal, the consciousness is pure. Because these two, they go hand in hand, like I explained just now. Without samadhi, wisdom cannot arise. Without wisdom, true samadhi cannot arise. So the two are connected. So this is the part Huineng wants Fahai to understand. So when samadhi and wisdom are equal, the consciousness is pure. Then you can live life, understand? Then understanding this Dhamma teaching, by cultivating within your own nature, the function is basically unproduced. It is right to cultivate both. That's why you will come to understand both samadhi and wisdom, you need to cultivate them as a pair. You cannot separate them. Then at this word, Fahai was greatly enlightened and spoke a verse in praise. He said, this mind is basically Buddha. By not understanding, I disgrace myself. I know the cause of samadhi and wisdom is to cultivate both and separate or detach myself from all things. Means you must develop the wisdom to detach, not to be deceived and deluded by any of this, what they call the phenomenal world. So this is the part you have to develop the understanding. Okay, we move on. Okay, you turn to the next page, 268. Here the Xuanhua's commentary also quite good. Okay, maybe you go back two paragraphs before that. Maybe we go through the commentary again. Hopefully it will help you. Bhikkhu Fahai, also called Wen Yun, compiled and edited the Platform Sutta for Six Patriarchs lecture. This one is just, I think, the story behind. Then Xuanhua said, although I dare not say that he liked to be first when he wrote this chapter, he certainly thought I am the master's number one great disciple, and consequently wrote about himself first. Great master, said Fahai, I don't understand the sentence. This mind is Buddha. Please explain it. And then Huineng express this or explain this. Do not produce the former thought. Here, Shenhua used the word produce. It's not the correct English word. The thought will arise. Do not conceive. The true mind that understand, do not conceive the former thought, said the master. And just that is mine. If you don't conceive or perceive, that is the true mind. You understand? Kan san, pu zi san. Your perception of form is consciousness, whereas this non-perception is wisdom. So this is mind, this is wisdom. So do not conceive the form of thought, said the master. And just that is mind. Then do not extinguish the later thought. And just that is Buddha, which is Samadhi. With neither, he still used the word production, with neither perceiving nor extinguishing, the mind itself is Buddha. So this is the final understanding. Then all appearances are set up by the mind. And this one is the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind. When your mind stirs, all marks come to be. And if you can set up all appearances and be separated from them, that is Buddha. Buddha means you can live in the world and not affected by the world. So that is the meaning. You can set up all appearances, all marks, and yet you are not affected by the mark. This is exactly like what the fifth patriarch Tou Huining. You remember? After he went and visited the fifth patriarch, the middle of the night, then Huining expounded to him the Diamond Sutta. Then when he reached the point, you have to realize this mind and understand this mind clearly. And yet, know how to use it, but not deceived by it. Then Huining came to great awakening. But that is the conditioned arising mind, dependent originating mind. Then he said, you must understand there are two minds. That's it. And this mind is useful, even though it's dependent originating, conditioned arising. But if you know how to use it and yet not deluded by it, that is true wisdom. That's why he came to great awakening. Straight away, all the enlightened beings, they know. The moment they understand this, they know how to live life. That's it. That's why that was a very powerful understanding. So here, Sixth Patriarch Huining, he actually taught this to Fahai. Then he has to explain, because Fahai don't have the wisdom like him. That time, the moment he heard the fifth patriarch explain, he straight away came to great awakening. Then Shenhua said, the mind is called wisdom, and the Buddha is called Samadhi. When Samadhi and wisdom are equal, the mind is Buddha, and Buddha is the mind. That's why Shenhua, he always used this sentence. He always quote, 佛就是心, 心就是佛, 你无慧心就无慧佛. Mind is Buddha, Buddha is mind. They are one substance. When thought is pure, then wisdom and samadhi, mind and Buddha, are equal. If you understand the sudden teaching, you know that the Buddha is not separate from the mind, and the mind is not separate from the Buddha. Samadhi is not separate from wisdom, and wisdom is not separate from samadhi. We call Buddha because that is the functional body that performed the function of a Buddha when he come to this conditioned arising world. So when you understand that, you will understand the deep meaning behind this sutta. Then after that, Shenhua continued, You don't understand because you have accumulated bad habits for many eons or ages. The wonderful function of the self nature. This one you have to pay attention. The wonderful function of the self nature is basically, what is it? Yeah, what is the word? Unproduce and undestroy. Because this is the eternal nature, your true nature. That's why I say your true nature cannot come out to live life. It's not a being. It's just suchness. Just that nature. Yeah. So when you cultivate the mind, you cultivate the Buddha. Because mind and Buddha is the same. When you cultivate the Buddha, you cultivate the mind. The same applies to samadhi and wisdom. You must cultivate them both. Then the next sentence is very important. When you don't understand, there are two, mind and Buddha. When you understand, you know that they are originally one. So in cultivating samadhi and wisdom, you should separate the self nature from all mark. Because mark arises later, dependent originating condition arising. So what you need to understand is, which Shenhua didn't explain is, even Huining also didn't really explain is, basically, we as a living being or a human being, we have two minds, like I explained before, two minds. So this mind, which we call the true mind, is one of the mind. So this is the first aspect of mind. This is the true mind, or we call it the original mind, eternal nature, self nature, or Buddha nature, or whatever, or the oneness nature. Then we have this, what they call condition arising mind. Second aspect of mind. Condition arising mind. So this one is condition arising or dependent originating. So this is the mundane mind. Mundane or thinking mind. And this one, before the wisdom come, is the heedless thinking mind. It's very heedless. So this condition arising, the other word is also dependent originating. Dependent originating. So either condition arising or dependent originating mind. So this is your mundane mind, the heedless thinking mind. And this is the one that causes you to be deluded. And this is one that can cause your karmic negativity, bring about downfall and all those things. So human being or cultivator of the way, they fail to understand these two aspects of mind. That's why they cannot penetrate the Dhamma. They cannot develop the true understanding of the teaching because they are very confused with the word mind. So whenever you see in the sutta mind, you have to understand which mind. Both are important. The second aspect is for living. Understand? This one is in the conditioned world. This one is needed for living. Without this one, you cannot live life. Whereas the first one is to realize enlightenment, to awaken, to develop wisdom. This is the unconditioned. You can realize the unconditioned, the first aspect. The second aspect, this one is the mundane mind. And this one, you need it to live life. Need it to live life. So both are equally important. That's why the fifth patriarch told Hui Ning, he said, you must understand and recognize this mind and must know how to use it and yet not confused or deluded by it. And this is the true living. This is with wisdom, with understanding. It doesn't mean that this second aspect, the dependent originating or conditioned arising mind or the mundane mind, is a problem. No. This one is only a problem when there is no wisdom. Understand? When there is wisdom connected to it, this one becomes Buddha. This one can become Arahant. This one can become the Bodhisattva or the enlightened being. Now you understand? But without wisdom, this one becomes heedless. This one creates a lot of karmic negativity. And this one brings about downfall. That's why the five aggregate of form and mind, which is born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, this one is deeply rooted. That's why these two, they are deeply rooted and connected. When the Buddha says, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, you are what you are because of your karma, it refers to the form and mind. Where the form and mind is subject to karma. And karma come about through heedlessness, not understanding this mind, don't know how to use it, deluded by it. That's why you grasp, you cling, you attach, you give meaning. And this is what the Buddha meant by the five grasping aggregate. When you grasp to this five grasping aggregate or upadana khandas, suffering arises. And this one comes from the mundane mind that don't have the understanding. So when you meditate, this one, the mundane mind, must cease. Then only you can realize the true mind. And when you can realize the true mind, then only you can meditate to awaken. That's why the true mind, when stabilized, becomes samadhi. So it's all connected. True mind, when stabilized, becomes samadhi. Stabilize. Got eye, ah? Eh? Got eye or not? Got, eh? So when you stabilize this silent mind, or the meditative mind, or the true mind, then it becomes samadhi. Then with samadhi, it can see things as they are to develop wisdom. So this one, see things as they are. And develop wisdom. That's why they are all connected. It's a circle. So this one and this one is the same. That's why mind is Buddha. Buddha is mind. And this wisdom came from the true mind. Then when the true mind stabilizes, means you are able to cease the mundane mind,
the thinking mind. So when this one sees, this one sees, through my arise, arise, or can be realized. As long as your mundane mind keep on stirring, reacting, creating thought, perception, the aggregates, they are like cloud that cloud your nature, your true mind, your true nature. So this one, it has to cease. So when this mundane mind ceases, when this one sees, then it's no longer clouding the nature. That's why that true mind, the silent mind, the awareness, the meditative mind, they shine forth. And that awareness nature is always there. Whether this mundane mind is there or not. But because you fail to have the ability to realize the true mind, not even for one moment or 1 second. Because your mind thinks a lot. Split second is gone. Split second is gone. That's why you are not mindful. You are not aware. You cannot be in the state of ever mindful or constant mindful. So the constant awareness, the daily mindfulness is very important. That's why all meditation leads to the silent mind. Capacity, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Then stabilize that to become samadhi. Then use it to meditate in the daily life. You will awaken. Then when you awaken, you can see things as they are. You will develop the wisdom. Then when you have this understanding, this wisdom will go back and make this mind in the state of upekkha. This is the last enlightenment factor. And this last enlightenment factor is very powerful. Seven enlightenment. Seven or last enlightenment factor. So this is the accumulation of cultivation. Finally, when you have this upekkha, which is the last factor of enlightenment, your mind becomes different. It doesn't need samadhi to make it peaceful. So this one is the sixth enlightenment factor. This one is the sixth enlightenment factor. Or factor of enlightenment. All the seven factor enlightenment, you want to understand, you listen to the clang talk, the recent clang talk, it's all explained there. Or you look at our Heart Sutta note, it's all explained there. Okay, we finish. Yeah? Oh, not bad, today we cover two chapters. Yeah, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, you all can rejoin. Do you have any question? You still got 15 minutes. Pass the mic. Pass the mic to Sister Tammy. Yeah.
Brother Teo, you said that consciousness. Okay, like this five aggregate of form and mind is is from this three nature characteristics, impermanence, non-self, suffering. So like consciousness, how can it, I mean like, I understand it's always yeah. there. So it's like permanent, like always there. Ma.
It's not permanent.
So I don't understand. Can you please?
No. What is your question? You have to be clear about your question. Otherwise, even if I answer you, you cannot benefit much. You have to be sure about your question. If you're not sure, you try. You don't worry. Then I will correct you. Because now you are asking a question that you yourself are not sure. Because you say consciousness is permanent. Who say that? The Buddha never say that. No, just now you started by saying the five aggregate of form and mind, they have the universal characteristics of impermanent. That's why the Buddha say rupang anicchang.
Yes.
Sabbe sankhara anicchang. Then sabbe sankhara dukkhang. Then sabbe sankhara anatta. Means they have this universal characteristic.
Yeah.
So consciousness is the same. Vijnanang also anicchang. Vijnanang also bring about dukkhang. Then vijnanang also anatta. So who say vijnanang or consciousness is permanent? The Buddha never say that.
The Buddha said
it's impermanent.
Yes. That's why I don't understand why is it they call it impermanent, because
consciousness arise and pass away. Do you know what is consciousness?
Yeah, it's
slowly, don't worry, slowly. We will go into it.
Consciousness, to me, is... it's always there, I don't understand.
Okay, I explain to you. You listen again, Sammy. This one is very useful. Because maybe in the early day, you didn't join us. That's why you didn't get the benefit of the explanation in the early day. Now I go back to like what I used to explain to Kanyamita when they are new. Always remember the word consciousness come from the word what? Come from the word what? Yeah? What is the word behind consciousness? Consciousness. This word come from what? Come from the word? This part. This part is conscious. Conscious. Means, as a human being, because of this mind, we can become conscious of things. Understand that? Conscious of what? Conscious of what you see. You understand? There is consciousness. Conscious of what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So if consciousness is capable of all this because we have our five physical senses and the mind as the sixth sensor, then what is happening? What is happening? Because without the senses, without the mind, you cannot be conscious. Like the physics experiment, remember? I mentioned this before, isn't it? This one is like the light bulb. So what happened is, this is the battery, positive, negative. So this is a power source. So when there is contact, when the switch is switched on, what happened? What happened? When the switch is switched on, the light bulb light up, isn't it? So your mind is the same. When there is contact of the mind with the organ, this is the organ, the eye, then you become conscious of what you see. You understand? So, now you understand this, you ask your question again. You say you don't understand why consciousness is permanent. Consciousness is never permanent. No contact, no consciousness. Contact with the senses, consciousness arise. And consciousness can be seeing, hearing, smell, That's why it moves so fast. If you are not mindful, you don't have the stability of samadhi and wisdom, you cannot cope with life. Because the whole of life is living. Your senses are fully engaged. Every moment you are seeing, thinking. Then your senses, because they are open, you are hearing and processing, thinking, reacting, stirring. That's why the five mental hindrances keep on arising. That's why consciousness is impermanent. They come and they go. But what you are trying to ask is the true mind. Just now I tried to explain this to you. The true mind is always there. You understand? Whether your mundane mind is active or not active, this flow is always there. The analogy is like the sun. Eh? Like the sun. Let's say this is the sun. Eh? Sun. Then, let's say Earth is here. Eh? Earth. When there is something to obscure, eh, this is the screen to obscure you from seeing the sun's ray. Then, let's say this one could be the cloud. Eh? It could be the cloud. Eh? So this one screen the sun's ray from Earth. But the sun's ray is still there. Eh? You understand? It's always there. Because this is ever shining, ever radiating. So your true mind, that nature, is always there. Whether there is noise by mundane mind or no noise. But when you switch off this fellow, that's why when this one sees, you can realize the true mind. That's why all of meditation is just silent. Don't try to do anything. Don't go and use the mundane mind to know, to think, to practice, to cultivate. You die. You have to realize this true mind. That's why I say you must understand there are two minds. And all of meditation is to train the mundane mind to be silent so that you can realize the true mind. And this one, you have to stabilize it. Then you will come to know that this is your true nature. This one never dies. But it cannot come out and live life. It's not a being. It's not you. That's why it's anatta.
I thought consciousness is true mind. So
consciousness is okay. Then I teach you another one. This one I have taught you many times already. You see, do you know how you create consciousness? How you create thought? You how old already? 20? Oh, 32. Okay. You live life for 32 years. You have been creating a lot of thought. Do you know how you create thought or not? How you think? How did thought arise? No, that one is theory. I want you to exactly tell me how you create thought. Because you are trying to use theory, contact, seeing, then you become conscious of what you see. That one you have to retrieve through memory. Understand or not? The memory that has the memory will perceive. Without memory, you cannot perceive. Understand or not? That's why the baby, when they are born, they got no memory. They don't know what is this. They are very naive. That's why they they got no word. That is direct seeing. But that type of mind, no use. Direct seeing without understanding. No, you must have all this rubbish in your brain, and yet you can see like a baby. That is the real meditation. That is seeing things as they are. Means without the word. I just direct seeing. Perceive it without the word. Like a baby. I cannot understand, but I can see all those things as it is. Means you label as brown. Let's say the bookshelf. Books, brown. All this is your word, your concept. But when you label them, you don't see. Understand? You are seeing words, concept. But when you really see, there is no word, no concept. But all this color, they are there. If you are colorblind, of course, you see different color. If you are not colorblind, chances is everybody who is not colorblind, they will see the same thing. So this is what seeing is all about. So if you want to understand, you have to tell yourself, before I become conscious, what state of mind am I? Before the five aggregate of form and mind arise, who am I? What am I? If you don't know, you say you don't know, understand? Because you haven't realized it. So tell me the truth, understand? So before thought arrives, who am I? It's just like the Zen, the Kong An. You know what the monk will ask them to meditate on? Who is chanting the Buddha's name? You understand? 谁在念佛? You know Mandarin or? So 谁在念佛? When you chant that thing, do you mean Tammy 在念佛? I use the mind. Yeah, this is Zen. This is learning.
Like now you feel that
I am chanting.
Yeah.
When you have that thought, means you are not chanting. The thought is chanting. Understand? The thought is the five aggregate of form and mind. And that one is chanting. That's why he said, inquire whether there is anybody inside there chanting. You have to chant until no one is chanting. Then how come the chanting is there? Who chant? The awareness is aware of the chanting. That one is not a being. Not a five aggregate of form and mind. That's why no one is chanting. And that is the true understanding. But you have to be continuously aware, mindful. Mindful until the awareness and the chanting become one. Like your body and your mind become one. You are in sati. When you are in sati, you just aware. Nobody is chanting. The awareness of the movement, the arising of consciousness, it's just an awareness. But the problem with human beings is the moment you are aware, this follow through memory, cling, attach, give meaning. I see, I hear, I smell, I taste, I feel. Therefore, I exist. And so that's why the egoic mind arises, the personality arises, the ego, the sakkayaditi, self-delusion arise. You are supposed to be aware so that you can separate the thinking mind from your true mind. So the moment you are aware, it ceases to deceive you. It ceases to take you away. Or what they call condition you into this mundane world, condition arising world. Because the living being is trapped in the thinking mind, the mania. They say they think a lot. This heedless thinking comes from your mental hindrance. Every time you react, like and dislike, pleasant, unpleasant, sensual desire, ill will, these are mental hindrance. It makes you heedless. Because it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness. You cannot become peaceful. You cannot become aware. So this is the one that become heedless because of the mental hindrance. So if you have understanding, then you can accept them for what they are, then this mind become different. You straighten your view, then you can see things as they are, accept them for what they are, means people are just the way they are. Heedless people do heedless things. Deluded people do deluded things. Angry people do angry things. Selfish people. Then when I can accept him for what he is, I don't react. I don't stir. I don't label him as this fellow, very dangerous, stupid fellow. I don't like him. So all this, no more. You start to accept him for what he is. When you accept, you are at peace. When you are at peace, then you realize, my mind doesn't stir. There is no duality. There is no sensual desire, ill will. So I got no more mental hindrance. So if I maintain my awareness, I have sati. I have mindfulness. Then this mindfulness will give me the understanding, the clarity. Then I realize my mind does not stir. This nature is at peace. Then I can see things clearly. Then whatever he do, I can understand. Because through that silence, I can see exactly, see things as they are. Not according to what my brain tell me, my memory tell me, my conditioning tell me. That's why I always say, acting according to memory is not acting at all. Memory is your accumulated experiences, good and bad, over your entire life. So this memory, it has views, opinion, conditioning, tradition, your race, your belief system. All this condition you to stir and act. Because your views and opinion and your conditioning is so strong. You always stir and react. That's why your mind is never peaceful. And because of that, you are never able to realize the other mind, which is your true mind. So how do you create thought? Now we come back to it. I got no more place to write. Maybe I write here. Initially, I ask you the question, who are you before the thought arises? You don't know, okay? So now I say, you can know. Before thought, I got no thought. Correct or not? No thought means no consciousness, no content. So I assume there is a state. Because very easy to deduce that. Before I know, there was nothing. Before this mundane mind arise, there must be something before that which is nothing. Completely nothing. So this is what they say, your true mind. Your true mind is actually the oneness nature, spacious awareness. And you know what is spacious awareness? Spacious awareness without a center. So this is your true mind or true nature. And this one you need to meditate to realize it. So this part is the most important. So without a center, it's just aware, completely. When the mundane mind don't arise, completely silent, still. But it's not in concentration, understand? Not a conditioned state, not in jhana, not in samadhi. That one is a conditioned state. That one is still a thought. Because they kill every thought into one-pointedness. That's why they call ekagata. So we are not interested in that. So if my mind, which is the true mind or the true nature, is spacious awareness without a center, then how did it create thought? I have to perceive something in it. Like the Buddha Rupang, the Kuan Yin Rupang, or my voice. You have to perceive it there. The moment you perceive, where did your consciousness go? You go to the thing you perceive in it. That's how you create a center. Understand? Huh? You create a center. For a thought to arise, you have to create a center. I better write down. For thought to arise, you create a center. And this center is the object of perception. Understand not? The object of perception. Can follow? Yeah? The place you perceive. The moment you are at the object, this one spelling. You must know it's a J. Okay, object. Object of perception. Maybe I clean it off. Otherwise, when you take a shot, you cannot see. Okay, object of perception. But when you are on the object, what happened to your mind? Because you are so conditioned with your memory. You straight away labor, isn't it? Because your memory tell you is what? Kuan Yin, Buddha, or Brother Teo's voice. This is how you input. This is how you input the content of consciousness. For thought to arise, you create a center. Then, what you do? Then, you input the content of consciousness. And what are these content of consciousness? Your five aggregate of form and mind, when it comes to the, this one is the receptacle. Receptacle, or L-E. Like a container. Is it L-E or A-L? L-E, I think L-E, correct. L-E. So this is the pure consciousness. Initially, like the Buddha said, in the seeing, it's just the seeing consciousness. So this is the receptacle, which is the pure not enough space, very difficult to write. Pure consciousness. So this receptacle is the pure consciousness, understand? Then what do you input? The content of consciousness. And what is this content? The five aggregate. Apart from consciousness, what else? Feeling. Some more. This content of consciousness is what your mind can do. So, feeling, perception, and sankhara, mental activity, everything that your mind can do, your mental state, whatever. So this is what your content of consciousness is all about. So this is the content that you put inside. That's why you perceive it as Kuan Yin image, Buddha image. Are there? Nice. Not nice. Antique. This is what you are doing, the sankhara inside that, and you are lost in thought. This is what heedless thinking is all about, where you are not seeing. The direct seeing is no labeling, no concept, like just now, Huining to Fahai. The preceding thought you don't conceive, understand not? Then the subsequent thought you don't extinguish. So this is how you create or you input the content, then you get yourself completely lost in it. So this is what creation is all about. I better put red color. Creation is all about. So this is how you create thought. I think better separate all this, otherwise you cannot see. Confusing. Yeah. No, TI. TI, receptacle. It's not receptacle, it's receptacle. No, it's a container. No, you should check again. Never mind, not important as long as you understand what the word is. Because I always pronounce as receptacle. It's definitely TI. No, this one is another word. You put in container. Is it? Come. Oh, well, means receptacle. Oh, means TA. A container device, etc., that receive and hold something. A receptacle for trash. Oh, correct. TA, sorry, thanks. It's CAL. Oh, CLE, correct. So this is TA, sorry. Yeah, thanks. Well, now I learned a new word. All the while I've been producing this word wrongly. Yeah? So TA, receptacle. Not receptacle, receptacle. Maybe English TA is T, is it? Table, receptacle. Yeah, table, yeah, correct. Yeah, not bahasa, otherwise we pronounce a receptacle. So can I understand? Yeah, Debbie? Yeah? So now clear.
Thank you so much.
So now you know how you create thought and all these things. This one I have shared at the retreat and in many of the classes, but that time most of you are not ready. You all cannot understand. But today, because we got more time, so the topic is relevant, related. So that's why I can explain all this. Yeah? So good question. Luckily you asked. Yeah.
Thank you. Sadhu.
Do you have any other question? Otherwise, you can meditate. Okay, you meditate first.
Brother, want to clarify something. Okay, mundane mind, then we are training, we tame all this mundane mind, right?
You train, train.
We tame
You train.
We train, all right.
Tame means you are trying to force it, understand or not?
We train. Then, to stabilize, because the true mind is all the while there, and it's pure, with pure consciousness.
Stabilize your silent mind, understand or not? Because your this mundane mind,
yes,
when you just able to like make it quiet, peaceful, silent, it is not stable, understand or not?
Okay.
It keep on thinking. Split second, lost in thought. Split second, like you do anapanasati, mindfulness. Yeah. After a short while, split second is gone. That's why the Buddha say, continue this anapanasati until it become very stable. Until breathing in, not only aware, breathing in, experiencing piti, experience. So all these are how you develop the training to stabilize that mindfulness. That's why I say, develop until the mindfulness becomes so fine, so stable, until so quiet. Finally, every object of meditation, everything that you use to train the mind, you technically have to relinquish it. Where you hold on to something to be mindful means you are depending on the object of meditation. It's like swimming. You are dependent on the float to keep afloat. That mind is a free mind. You must be able to develop the meditation until this silent mind becomes silent by itself. Means the mind is in sati. The mundane mind is in sati. Then it's just aware. It don't think anymore. It's not heedless anymore. That one can do the function of the form and mind. That form and mind can live life. That is the real meditation. Means don't input the content. Just continuously aware. That's why the Buddha say, ever mindful, constantly meditating. That is the state that you have to develop the stability of your mindfulness. If you are mindful only off and on, no meaning. In life, you can find out. Suddenly, you want to go out and buy something, your whole of your mindfulness training is gone. Understand? Like they say, huh? When you are courting, they say, Yao Cheng Yam Sui Pao, means what? God love, yeah? You will not be hungry. But like that, Alexander Pope say, when poverty knocks on the door of love, love fly out the window. Understand? So when you, the moment you become heedless, your mindfulness is gone. Exactly the same. Because you can't understand and you have not developed the stability. That's why the spiritual faculty, they have to become balanced, powers, very stable. So you have to stabilize it is because this one, if it's not stabilized, it will continue to be heedless. It will continue to arise and think. That's why during the training, when you are under training, you have to develop until it's very stable, until, like the Buddha said, ever mindful. Yeah. But the funny thing about meditation is, when you are ever mindful, when you have that stability and that samadhi, you can see things as they are, then suddenly you awaken and you understand. That understanding transforms you. The understanding through that wisdom completely transforms you and you are no longer heedless. Means what? You're no longer like before, think a lot. You come to understand that these are all not real. Think also like that, don't think also like that. And they are there to deceive you. It's only a tool and an instrument for you to come to this world and live. So use it, understand not? Need to think or need think. Don't need to think also go and think. Think for what? Think until so restless, full of fear. That's why I say human being is very funny. Worry about this, worry about that. Worry about everything. Worry about money. Worry about your health. Worry about your relationship with people. Then worry about your property, your car. Everything that you think you own. Why did you hold on to them? Because you believe you are real. And because you believe you are real, you believe all this that you own are real. That's how you cling, you grasp, you hold. That's how this mundane mind cannot stop, understand? But when you understand that they are just dependent originating condition arising, no reality, even this form of mind also don't belong to you, then you will not worry about them. You will not even think about them. You need to use the thought, use it. You need to live life, live. You need to experience life to the fullest experience. That's why be with the moment. To experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. And life is so beautiful, so meaningful. But human beings are so conditioned, so rigid in their views, opinion. And they are so full of worry. Everything also they want to worry. When I die, how? Worry about death. Worry about disease. Oh, yo, the doctor say maybe I got cancer, you know. Or somebody tell you, hey, you got this symptom or not? Oh yeah, I think I got. Oh, panic already. Worry already. The mind become restless already. It all arise because you don't have the understanding. But when the moment you understand, that's why I say the funny thing about meditation, the moment you awaken, no need to do. The mind become like that, automatic. When the spiritual faculty is there, you are aware just by itself. No need object of meditation. No need training, nothing. That's why you have to have the understanding. The moment you understand, you cultivate with understanding, you move very fast. You progress very fast. You transform very fast. Otherwise, you continue to go by the old way. Because you scared of not doing it correctly. Because you have been so conditioned that meditation is not that. If I don't know rising, falling, I'm not doing vipassana. Then how to progress? If I don't listen to the monk or to the Buddha's teaching, then I simply go and do things that people tell me, I get into trouble. If you have this type of heedless thinking, born of delusion, nobody can help you. What did the Buddha say? Investigate into it. You didn't even want to investigate, because you use your mundane mind to perceive. Hey, the old monk, no, cannot be wrong. That's how. They have been doing this for the last how many years now? You are not investigating. You are just believing your memory, your conditioning, your thought. That's why you act this way, you cannot progress. You cannot realize the true Dhamma. You have to investigate into it yourself. Find out yourself. Train your mind. What have you got to lose? The worst case scenario is you lost some time, understand? You give it a try. If it doesn't work, not suitable for you, then have an open mind. Then don't do. But if you really have the faith and the understanding, the moment you give it a try, I tell you, you will have a lot of joy, a lot of gratitude. And when the understanding unfolds, then you come to realize, all this while the teaching has been like that, and yet living being fail to understand. Because you all are so conditioned by thought-based meditation, method, technique, teacher, object of meditation. Not to say you cannot use them. You can use them, but you must understand what they are. Can you follow? Means they are just object of meditation, technique, method. They are just skillful means to train your mind, the heedless thinking mind. But they don't know how to fix it. They don't know how to make it quiet and peaceful. Well, everybody know if you want to meditate, you must have peace, calmness. So when they cannot get it, what do? They teach you method, technique to focus, to concentrate. And you gullibly do. And they label it vipassana, samatha, jhana. You gullibly believe. And you just go and do without understanding. Like I explained at the Thursday class at Pamasuri Sound. The basic training of mind is already defined by the Buddha. Dhammapada verse 21. What is Dhammapada verse 21? Eh? What did the Buddha say? Verse 21. Huh? Ayo, Dhammapada verse 21 also cannot remember. I repeated so many times. No wonder most of you cannot get it. It's all on heedfulness. The whole of the Appamadavagga, verse 21 to 40, is all on heedfulness. That's why it's called Appamadavagga. And the opening statement of this heedfulness is verse 21. What did the Buddha say? Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are, I see, dead. So if you don't train your mind, what happens? If you choose to be heedless, you are, I see, dead. Spiritually dead. You don't stand a chance. And it's very clear. The Buddha make it very clear. So I have to train my mind to be heedful. To be heedful means what? Then you move on to Dhammapada verse 22 and 23, especially 23. The Buddha said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, they will realize the supreme, born-free Nibbana. This is the enlightenment you are waiting for. The Buddha said, you only need to have this heedfulness. You will be destined for enlightenment. You will realize the supreme, born-free Nibbana. And what is this? Heedful, to be heedful, there is two parts. First part, ever mindful. Second part, constantly meditative. Means ever mindful to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. And within the Noble Eightfold Path is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So you start from there. Means you have to train your mind to be? To be heedful is to be ever mindful, to cultivate the meditation. So you have to train your mind to do what? If you like that, also cannot understand how to teach you. You're supposed to be heedful, and heedfulness is ever mindful. How to be ever mindful? You have to train your mind to be mindful first, isn't it? Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. You better get that understood. And are you doing that in the meditation? You can be meditating for umpteen years, I tell you. You don't do that. You are nowhere near what the Buddha is trying to teach you. Not until you are ever mindful, you cannot use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you cannot reflect, you cannot contemplate, the three turning all cannot come out. Because you don't have mindfulness. And you cannot investigate the Dhamma. But this is the first factor of enlightenment. And this first factor of enlightenment is not just sati, you know. Sati, very stable, you know. That's why ever mindful. Then only you can investigate into his teaching. Then only you can develop the faith after it stand up to investigation. And this is what meditation is all about. So train your mind to be aware, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then only it can meditate in the midst of life. The form of meditation is to train your mind, to have this silent mind stabilized. Then move it to the daily life. This mind state that you have trained, stabilized, you have to bring it out into the daily life. You have to be mindful in the midst of life. That's why the Buddha say, the constantly meditative and ever mindful, they will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana. So the instruction is so clear. Then the Buddha also say, you have to understand, why are you not peaceful? Why can't you meditate? It's because the mental hindrance are there. The mental hindrance hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you think a lot. You become heedless. So, if that is the case, what did the Buddha advise you? What must you do? Cultivate the opposite, five spiritual faculty. Then this mental hindrance will be gone. Then you will become different. Where with the spiritual faculty, it can enable you to understand spiritual teaching. And the spiritual faculty is about developing the faith through understanding who the Buddha is and how wonderful the teaching is. Then when you see this, you see the importance of his teaching, then you go all out to cultivate. Means you develop the spiritual zeal to go this way. And when you develop the spiritual zeal to go this way, the first thing you have to do is to train your mind to be aware. That's why sati come in first. That's how meditation come about. So you either start the training of the five spiritual faculties so that you overcome the hindrance and you can meditate straight away. No need object of meditation and all those things. Otherwise, you need the skillful means to train, to stabilize your mindfulness. And when you understand this, then you know what you are doing. When you go for retreat, when you go for meditation, how you conduct yourself in daily life, you will come to know. Without the daily mindfulness, you don't stand a chance. The Buddha already said, only the constantly meditative and ever mindful, not only when you are in the retreat or meditation, in between, in the midst of life, what are you doing? You become heedless again. And the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. That's why this is a full-time training, full-time job. The monks has to follow this training. That's why their precepts are heavy, a lot. Is to keep them constantly aware, mindful. Otherwise, you will break your precept. Because there are 227. To remember them also already a big headache or not easy. And to be ever mindful not to break is even more difficult. That's why the whole training is about developing mindfulness. Everything you do in life, you have to be mindful. You have to be aware. And you have to develop it until it's so stable, until your mind is in sati. When your mind is in sati, that is the ultimate training. Then only you can carry this mind state that is trained into the daily life. That's why you have to meditate until your breathing, your object of meditation become very subtle. Like no more breathing. Like everything is really so quiet, so tranquil, so still. That is what the Buddha called the factor of enlightenment of paucity. When you are in paucity, your mind is still, quiet, tranquil. No thought, nothing. That is your true mind. And that is the one that can see things as they are, that can meditate, that can understand and awaken. You're supposed to develop until that state. But people don't understand. People thought, wow, as long as I note rising, falling, I'm doing vipassana. Then what else? They become so gullible. When they, like, the rising, falling become very subtle until they cannot feel, they panic. They go and ask the teacher or the monk. Then the monk say, do sitting touching. And you do sitting touching without knowing what you are doing. You again verbalize at the sahara. Sitting, touching, aware, aware, aware. You verbalize again. Then how can the mind become quiet, still? That's why I said, silence everything, don't do anything. Until the mind becomes so tranquil and so still, until the mind enters sati. The mind realizes the higher awareness, mindfulness. And when you reach the higher level of mindfulness, which is paucity, your mind is in sati, everything you do is in sati. Every action, every moment of seeing, hearing, all in sati. That is the real daily mindfulness. Not the one using the thought. Not aware, not this, not that. You think all the noting is mindfulness. The moment you note, you verbalize, you create a concept, an idea. That's why I say body and mind move as one. When you bow, body and mind as one, no thought. That is sati. Don't go and note. Like, luckily, Tammy asked that day. He said, like, in the retreat, a lot of mind. Every mind got view, got opinion. All these are thought, understand or not? But this is not sati. The sati, no word one, like I say, direct seeing. It's just aware. Don't verbalize, don't chatter one. Don't talk inside that one. The moment you create all this, this is the thought. The aggregate is there. You already perceive. The view come out also you don't know. That is sankara, understand? Your conditioning. And that is not sati. That's why if they don't have this understanding, they cannot teach you. But this is what they learn from their teacher. The teacher teach like that, they also teach like that. And you expect to awaken from that teaching. But he himself cannot see. And most of them are not clear about what they are doing. Sometimes they may have certain glimpses of understanding, awakening. But because they don't have that understanding to teach, to share, they cannot explain this thing to you. And do you know, to explain all this, need very stable and clear understanding. Otherwise you cannot. Like when you graduate from the university, you think you can lecture, you can teach. A lot of things you are not clear. Oh, theory, understand? You go and work, practical experience, then become an expert through mistake, understand? Then after that, they say molian. You know what is molian? You go into the career field, job market. You people train you, understand? But the Chinese Mandarin word molian is very good. How you translate to English? Means you go into the job market to learn, to experience. Not mentoring. It was the mentoring, more. Polish. polish until you shine. Because you are just what they call stained rock, understand? That's why you have to polish until it shine, become a gem. Then through the experience, you learn. Then you formulate your own understanding. And then you can give lecture, understand? You can teach. Then you can advise people, you come out, don't be too egoic. Don't be too rash. Think you very good. You haven't met a good one. Then they will tell you, their experience and all things. But when you met the good one, you really understand what. What they can tell you is, you have never experienced all this way, and they can even predict to you and tell you what will happen if you do it this way. And that is what the understanding differ from those who have knowledge. Those that have the practical experience and the real understanding, they teach differently. They don't teach you theory, you understand? They go out of the norm. And they say, when you come out to the job market, it's not what your lecturer tell you, not what your book tell you. The career field is different. Everywhere is different. Every country is different. Some are corrupt society. Some are not so corrupt. And you don't know their culture, their way, you don't know how to go around, understand? Especially Malaysia, how to survive. Malaysia boleh, everything also boleh, but you don't know what is boleh. You say, in Australia, UK, we go by the rules. You go by the rule, your file never come out. Understand? It's just like you meditate without understanding, you never progress. So, meditation needs to be done with understanding. And understanding is not difficult. When you listen attentively, make note. Don't left ear go in, right ear go out. Walk out of the class, again, back to the normal, heedless way of living. You never learn if you do that. You have to have the faith, the very, very strong faith. Then the virya, then tell yourself, this is what you need. Otherwise, you suffer. You become miserable. If this window, when the sasana is there, you don't get it right, you are going to be in serious trouble, I tell you. Like one of the sisters just wrote to me recently. He said, last time he didn't know what the cultivation of the Bodhisattva way is all about. Until he read that new book. Then he realized, actually, it's not what people say. What people say is all the thought, delusion. Then he realized, if I have known this, he said, thank you so much for a very clear explanation. If I had known this, I would have gone all out into this. Then now she did it herself at home. And he said, the next time if I will have a condition to repeat this taking of the vow ceremony, she said, call her, let her know. She wants to take it. So all this, when people read through, they appreciate, they understand, then they become very different, very, very different. Not like what you think. In the year 1971, when this nature starts to search, it become very serious when I saw the Four Noble Truths. I realized this is what I need in life. If I understand this Four Noble Truths, I understand life. I know how to live life. My life will be beautiful, taken care of. That's why I go all out to cultivate. No need to wait till suffering. Or people tell you, hey, you go and study Dhamma. Where got such condition? Last time I want to find somebody who can tell me what is this mind. Also, I cannot. I only need to know certain truth about the mind. Nobody can tell me until I met my first teacher, Ajahn Yantra. And Xuan Hua, of course. When Xuan Hua say, 一切为心造, mind is a forerunner of all things, then only I start to understand the importance of training this mind. Because straight away from the Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, then after that my teacher, the Thai monk Ajahn Yantra, told me, he said, always remember, mind is mine. Not like you tell your wife or your spouse, mind is mine. This one is M-I-N-D, not M-I-N-E. A lot of people like this one, I say, mine is mine, yours is also mine. Whatever that is mine. Whatever that is yours is also mine. But my teacher say different. He say, your mind. Mind is mind. M-I-N-D. Body is body. Body never the mind. Mind never the body. Can you understand? Yeah? Very easy there. We choose the care mind. Mind most important. Then after that, you know what he add? The body is important too. Because the body must harmonize with the mind to meditate, to live life, to train. That's why people who has awakened, they understand, they can tell you, not in the book one. Where God Dhamma book tell you, mind is mind, body is body. Body never the mind never the body. We choose the care mind. Mind most important. Yeah. So all this has to come through your own understanding. Then you can develop. Then when I understand that mind is mind, body is body, I become different. Then I dare to sit, I dare to meditate. When the pain comes, I tell myself, I have faith in my teacher. Body is just a body, mind is mind. The two are different. I choose to take care of mind. That's why I relax into it, silent. Then all of a sudden, the shift in consciousness came, flashed through. Then that whole so-called phenomenon of pain, that whatever that happened to the tactile consciousness, completely gone. Then I realized, hey, really, mind is mind. We are separate from the form. Completely, no more. Because the sati has taken over. Then it becomes so big, it went down and checked. What happened? How come the thing completely gone? Well, I reach a point where the leg is like going to paralyze. And the thought tell you, you better get up off the sitting. Otherwise, you're going to be paralyzed. Then, like the Buddha make that vow underneath the Bodhi tree. After they make rise, he said, not until he is enlightened, he will not arise. Even until the blood, the what dry up, also he won't arise. But I'm not so brave. I never say all those things. I just say, I have faith in my teacher. Body is just a body. Mind is mine. I'm going to sit. Paralyzed, also paralyzed. Then I just sat. I relax into it. Because I never cling. I never worry. I never have any doubt. The faith was very strong. That's why the sati take over. Then all of a sudden, the switching consciousness, it becomes samadhi. Then I realize the awareness that is aware of that thing, that so-called tactile consciousness, no word one. You all call the pulling, the what, the all this movement is still there. But there is no word. The awareness is just aware. And it's so amazing. The mind is the mind. The body is the body. The two are completely separate, detached. They are not the same. Then I start to understand, what is that awareness all about? What is that true mind all about? Then from that day onward until now, I don't have problem with pain or sitting. I can just understand, relax into it, and deal it. But as I age, I also don't want to be a hero. Understand? What for? To show people I can sit for 3 hours, 6 hours. No need. That's why I asked for this chair. But when condition is such I need to sit, I can still sit. It's not a problem. But this body will go the way of nature. Don't try to be a hero. So your question, you understand, why you have to train. Because this mind, if it's not stabilized, it's very heedless, active. So you need the spiritual faculty. If the spiritual faculty are still not there yet, you need an object of meditation to stabilize it. That's why the Buddha recommends anapanasati. Then when it's already more or less stabilized, he say, move it into the four postures. Standing aware, walking aware, sitting aware, lying down aware. Then sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement in the present moment. And that is what the daily mindfulness is all about. Then like the Buddha says, standing aware, looking forward aware, bending, turning, stretching aware. Even answering nature's call aware. Means throughout the day, fully aware. You have to do that when you are under training. But when you have awakened, your mind different already. And then beyond study, you don't have to do anymore. Do for what? To show off. To let people know that you very, very, what, diligent. You can endure, you can sit, you can walk like that. You can stand on ice, you can stand on snow. What for? Develop the understanding of who you are, what you are. What is this mind all about? That is more important. These are the essential dhamma that you need to understand. And when you understand them, you are completely different. Yeah. Okay, what's the time now? You don't have time for meditation. 45 more minutes. You want to meditate? Maybe half an hour, then 15 minutes of Q&A. Okay, you can off the light. Then you can have your half an hour of meditation. those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those half an hour, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed. Eh? Then use this mind that is already trained, stabilized, to meditate in the midst of life, daily mindfulness. Heedfulness is very important. To be heedful, you have to train the mind to be ever mindful. Before it is ever mindful, you have to train it to be mindful, then stabilize it. Then only that mind can meditate. Then when you use that ever mindful mind to meditate in the midst of life, that is the real meditation. Okay, now we'll open up for Q&A and reporting of meditation. You got anything to report or question, you put up your hand, then we will pass you the mic. Yeah, pass the mic to Brother Chin Hao. Yeah.
Hi, good evening.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to share something about...
Can.
For the past few weeks, a lot of like food craving, is it? So, on Tuesday, last Tuesday, I shared with Brother... So I told him that I have a lot of like food cravings and then I watch a lot of like food videos and all this. So he told me, he pointed out to me and said that you're so heedless. This is a very good condition for you to contemplate.
Yeah.
What he said was suddenly a shock to me, you see.
Yeah.
I was speechless.
Yeah.
Then over the last, over the 2 days, I was contemplating on it. I was like, I thought about it, and then I would say, I was like, I was so really hit. I was so deluded, and because of my desire, I watched a lot of like the food videos, you see. And it's like, instead of like looking into it, I'm like adding oil on the fire. And I told myself, do I still want to be a slave of my desire, being pulled around and just hours and hours, you see? So for some reason I was thinking that suddenly I noticed that since on Tuesday until now, I have no more sort of like, you know, the intentions to go and watch the food videos and all this. And I contemplate all this thought, it just come and go. And if, because I give meaning on it, and I put the emphasis on it, so it was just driving me crazy and crazy. So, but when I look at it, then I say, it's just a desire. It come and it go. So I think,
what is your question?
No, I mean, I'm just sharing, you see.
Oh, okay.
Say, because of that contemplate, for the past few days, the power seems to get lesser and lesser, you see.
Oh, okay.
Okay, this is what I want to report, you see.
Yeah. Thank you for all that sharing. But you have to be careful, Based on what you say, you are still caught in the thought. You have still not come out of the thought.
Because you are still using the thought to rationalize, to like blame yourself. The egoic mind is still there, it's so strong. Then just because somebody mentioned something, Brother Song told you, you are heedless because you become like too attached to this food video. Instead, you should use it as a condition to cultivate. To cultivate is correct, but you don't understand what he means, what he is trying to tell you. To cultivate means to observe yourself, to be mindful of what has happened. You have gone through a type of what they call detox, maybe a type of fruit, mainly fruit, consumption of fruits, followed by a few days of just coconut water, and they call this detox. I mean, you can experience it if you are curious, you think it can help you to improve your health or what, you can go for it. But find out for yourself. Develop more mindfulness. Be heedful. That's what you need. Not rationalizing and using the thought to tell, oh, I got a lot of craving. It's driving me crazy. Of course, these are the things that you have to observe. Then you come to know the conditioned mind can become drawn into all this. But they are not you. Understand? Craving is not you. It's a condition arising state, born of delusion, heedlessness. All this, you need wisdom to understand, to awaken to. You don't go and reason, understand? You don't go and rationalize. You don't go and say, wow, I'm really heedless. I shouldn't watch all this video. Then it doesn't help you. It's another thought giving you another idea to try to modify the way you go about living your life. You are not developing understanding of who you are, what you are, what is going on within your form and mind. You cannot see the dependent origination that condition you into this movement, this way of living life. That's why I used to share with you and reminded you, just do, maintain mindfulness. Are you doing that? Are you training yourself to be mindful? When you are more and more mindful, more and more heedful, you will understand yourself. You will see all this yourself. You don't have to wait till Brother Song to tell you. All this understanding will come to you. Otherwise, you will continue to use knowledge to rationalize. And it's unending. It's just like what Tammy went through at the retreat. It's the same. Mind observing another mind. And this mind, if you are not mindful, heedful, silent and aware, is the thought again. So without mindfulness, without the stability of it, you can't cultivate, you can't develop the actual wisdom, and you will continuously reason. That's why I call this thought-based meditation. That's why I advise you, don't try to know. Bow. Develop the daily mindfulness. Train your mind until it's fully aware, mindful throughout the day. Don't try to know. Then finally, maintain faith. Sada, virya, sati. Then when sati comes, your form and mind will know. You will understand what sati is when you saw it. Your body and your awareness become one. Everything you do is in sati. Your breathing is in sati. Wherever you place your mind is aware. Seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, everything is in sati. And that is the beginning of real satipatthana, real cultivation, real understanding of the Dhamma. The other way is to reflect and contemplate, the second turning wisdom. Reflect and contemplate is to understand the Dhamma behind, so that you can straighten your view. That one you should do very often. That's why my teacher used to advise me, reminded me. We choose aware. We choose contemplate until very, very clear. Contemplate is not thinking, not using the thought to rationalize. Contemplate means we inquire. Why did the Buddha say this? Why did Brother Theo say this? We just want to understand, that's it. We are not rationalizing. We are not trying to blame ourselves. This is craving, this is anger, this is stupid, I still got anger. There is no such thing as I still got anger. Anger is dependent originating, condition arising, like you say, thought come and go. Whether you are mindful or you are not mindful is very important. The moment you are mindful, you are no longer heedless. As long as you are heedless, you cannot be mindful. You can only be mindful when you are aware without thought. That's it. And ask yourself, are you without thought? If I am not without thought, then I have to stabilize the spiritual faculty. I have to stabilize my daily mindfulness. Then I have to do more contemplation, reflection. I have to stay alone, keeping my mind on Dhamma, the essential Dhamma I taught about. Then I have to reflect, Rupang Anicchang, Rupang Anatta, Vedana Anicchang. What is the meaning of all this? Why did the Buddha repeat all this? Why did he ask the monk to recite and chant? What is its meaning? So when you reflect and contemplate, then you will know how to ask the question. How do you develop the understanding of all form is impermanent? When the Buddha say Rupang, what does it mean? Is it just a physical form? Or is it more than that? Then how can I see it? These are the inquiry, the question. Then this is how you move. If you don't have this contemplative inquiry and understanding, you cannot move. You just rationalize, use thought, use knowledge, continue to like go round and round and round because you don't see much improvement in what you are doing. The first thing is you don't have the understanding to remain focused on the cultivation. The focus on the cultivation is I need to train this mind, stabilize it, make it ever mindful. Am I doing it? I have to develop the spiritual faculty. Am I doing it? If you don't work on all this, it's like you want to learn badminton or kung fu or anything. The basic also you have not learned. Your footwork. Then how to cover the court. The rule of the game. All this you don't want to learn. You straight away want to play badminton. I tell you, very difficult. Then you have to train your stamina and all those things. Then like kung fu, when the master say, make your horse stand very stable. This is your foundation, asana. If your horse stand is not stable, you can be easily defeated. So when you meditate, it's the same. Defilement can defeat you easily when you don't have the essential Dhamma stably understood. If you don't have the mindfulness to be ever mindful. That's why I told Tammy just now. Your senses are fully engaged. Every moment, every instant, consciousness arises and pass away. And when it arrives, a lot of things happen. Every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, the thought process is so fast. If you are not ever mindful, you cannot cope with life. You cannot understand what is going on. You cannot be with the moment to be aware of life. All this is going to make you heedless. You will continue to have this problem. That's why those who never focus on the cultivation, they cannot progress. Hopefully, this can help you. It's not only for you. Everybody, you have to bear this in mind. You must know what you are doing. Then question, are you training your mind to be aware? Are you working on the five spiritual faculty? Don't think it's very easy. Oh, I contemplate a brother. The five daily contemplate. The Buddha said every day you must reflect, contemplate until you understand it very clearly. Until the moment you see, you understand.
the moment you recite, you understand. That's why in a lot of my talk I mentioned, the moment I chant Rupang Anicang, I understood everything. What is Rupang and how is impermanent? Because the mindfulness saw the dependent originating, the condition arising, cause of phenomena. And what is a phenomenon? Whatever that the mind can perceive is a phenomenon. So every moment of perception is a phenomenon. And perception come and go, that's why it's impermanent. And every of these phenomena can be mental, physical, or nature's phenomena. Whatever that your mind come to perceive, they are of the nature to arise. Then if the condition continue, they will continue to exist. If the condition cease to be, it cease to be. You have to see it there and then. The moment of the phenomena arising, sustaining, and passing away, you have to be with the moment to awaken to the three characteristics. Otherwise, you cannot. Otherwise, it remains a theory. That's why mindfulness is very, very important. It has to be very stable. So all this, you have to really go into it, understand it, then cultivate according to the understanding. Then you are very focused. You are not gullible. You don't go and repeat all those things. But these are habitual tendency, conditioning from life. And you continue to use thought, use knowledge, the mundane mind to rationalize. You find it constantly trapped, very difficult to come out of it. But the moment you develop the spiritual faculty and the stability of mindfulness, all these things you will understand. Then your question all gone. Everything is self-answered. Then when Brother Song talk to you, you will understand what he say. Then you will know how to reply to him. Understand? Then you will have the understanding to communicate. And then from there you realize not only you learn in that process, you also progress. Otherwise, the gap between his understanding and your understanding is so far. What he saw, you cannot see. He's trying to help you. He just prompt to you. Because he saw you keep on like very excited in all the food video. But it's very normal for a human being to be interested in what they do. But you give importance, like you say. That's what you will go and do. But when you do, you are not heedful, you are not mindful. You need people to tell you that you are lost. You have become heedless. It's not to say whether he is right or he is wrong. It's nothing to do with right or wrong. But this is what he observed in you. So you have to use that understanding to reflect, to contemplate. Oh yeah, I was never aware when I was doing all this. Then straight away you jump to conclusion. You say, "Ayo, how come I didn't realize that I am completely heedless? The I am completely heedless is again there. It's not you. It's delusion, wrong view. When you don't understand, you will do things like that. You are just the way you are. So accept you for what you are. Don't be unhappy about what happened. But that is not you. That is the mind state that arise. That's why that form of mind is just a form of mind. Before it understands, it will be heedless. It will do all this. Then you start to reflect back, how did the Buddha teach? How did he start? How did Brother Theo teach? How did he abide? Because we went through the same training. That's why I can tell you the same thing that he has been trying to teach all the monks and living beings. So this is what Dhamma is all about. This is what meditation is all about. Hopefully you reflect on it and develop the focus, the understanding. You have to understand it clearly, then cultivate with understanding, then you become very different. You will progress, but your mindfulness is not stable. Your spiritual faculty is not stable, and it's not easy to get it stabilized. It takes a while. It needs a lot of faith, saddha, virya. Just do. That's why the three things. Have faith, be sincere, persevere, just do.
read through the notes, the Bodhisattva way, and understand it, and develop the faith, and go all out to train your mind. Okay? Yeah, you can rejoice. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we have to end, huh? Because 6:07 already. So we will do the sharing of merits, then we will end. Huh? Okay, we will start the sharing of merits by sharing all merits that we have developed over the past 2 to 3 hours with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu loka sasana itta wata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Huh?